Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio.
And greetings, Earth Explorers. We're coming to you live from southern Mississippi. Our AccuWindow forecast, 82 degrees, clear skies. We're so glad that you're here with us tonight. If you want to be part of the program, and we want you to, you can reach us at 530-413-4511. By the way, those of you that are lighting up the chat room at xsquaredradio.com, we've got a great mediator in there. So be sure to go in there, stir it up. If you want to send me a fast text message, you can do that by reaching us at X2-Radio on Skype. We'll have that up all night. If I try to stay in the chat room, what happens is it eats up the bandwidth here in this remote location where I guess you would call it a second world country here in southern Mississippi. Not really fast internet, so we do well to get the sound quality that we do out to you. And believe me, I would love to monitor that chat room or be a fly on the wall in there anyway. But keep it going because it's generating a lot of buzz, and we appreciate it. Visit xsquaredradio.com often because this week we're going to be launching a new look. I think you'll like it because I like it. And thanks to Dylan Case, he is a diligent fan, and he's helped us with the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition website. I definitely want you to check that at NPIEE.org, N-P-I-E-E.org. That stands for North Pole Inner Earth Expedition, NPIEE.org. Go there, check it out. The website's got a new look, a new feel, better layout of the information, and if you want to know what's going on with the expedition, stay current with that. We'll keep that updated on a regular basis. If you are east of Earth, be sure to reach us at 530-413-4515. And if you're west of Earth, you know where that is, 530-413-4520. And there are lots of you out there, and we always welcome your presence. Even though we can't see you, we know you're listening. You can call in by cell phone and listen while you're walking around with your Bluetooth or your headphones on. That phone number is 712-432-0075. I get a lot of email from those people who are out there listening that way. I guess it's a very cool way to listen to internet radio. I'm going to try it sometime. You know, internet radio is really changing the way talk radio, the free press, is being done. Those of you that listen to broadcast radio, you may get frustrated with the idea, or at least the realization, that about every 15 minutes, here comes 10 or 12 minutes of commercials. Now, you might think the commercials are a bad thing, but the radio station thinks they're a wonderful thing, and they're trying every single minute of every single day to sell more. One of the things that you might notice is that these commercials play faster than what normal speech is. That's because they use software to compress out all the pauses in the commercial. The reason they do that is over a 24-hour period, it gives them several minutes more of marketable airtime. And that's what it's all about, selling airtime. Why? Because radio programs or radio stations are a commercial enterprise. and not many of them are privately owned anymore by individuals. They're owned by conglomerates. And once the conglomerate picks up a program that they either like the content or they can manipulate the content or provide the content, they put it out to 600, 700, 800 radio stations. Hence, a program that is somewhat entertaining, but perhaps not so informative or free, gets a tremendous amount of airplay, while those radio programs that would be more entertaining or more informative don't, because they're not picked up by these large syndicated broadcast networks. That's what makes internet radio so amazing, and that's what makes BBS radio so amazing. In the world of internet networks that are out there broadcasting personalities and speakers and lecturers all over the world, BBS radio is consistently one of the top. It's a labor of love for the Newsoms, and they do a fantastic job dedicating their life to it. And it shows. It shows in the product. It shows in the website. And if you think you have what it takes to be a talk radio host, an hour a week, 2 hours a week, every single night, why don't you get a hold of them at bbsradio.com and tell them that you heard about it here on X Squared Radio. We'd be happy to refer you. We want you to give it a try. We can always use great talent here on the network. This is a great place to start. It's where I started, and it's where I still am. And X Squared Radio is consistently in the top one or two programs on this network. We're proud to be there. We work hard to increase that quality every single week. And we do speak with some of the best experts on the earth on various subjects. We read their books. I formulate the questions. And then they come here for scientific intercourse on the air. And it can be quite enlightening. You'll learn a lot. It may stretch your imagination, but that's okay. Everything is safe here, and everything is positive. We don't attack anybody. We just bring it out to everyone. Another advantage is that when you're listening from your phone and you have to leave the building or the room, you can continue to listen without missing anything of X Squared Radio. You can come right back, jump right back on your computer, and you can interact with the program live. Now, when you're listening to most radio programs, you don't get a chance to call in until, the last half hour. And by then, there are people that have been on hold for an hour. You have something better to do with your life than that. You may get bumped by several commercials or have to squeeze your comment into 25 words or less before a commercial for gold or for insurance. Not so on X Squared Radio, because we only run a commercial space at the top of the hour. We do have a couple of affiliates that we push. The reason we do that is because they are integral with the mission of the radio program itself. We don't run commercials because that's why you pay for the subscriptions. You pay for the subscriptions so we don't have to run radio commercials. Those of you that can't listen to the program live or you want to listen to it again on your own time, maybe you missed a very important point or you had to walk away for a while, hey, it's $20 a year. $20 a year for less than the price of a movie for two, you get access to over 1,000 hours of content of X Squared Radio. And you can always go to the website and look at the guests list, and you can see who's been on. And you can cherry pick if you like, or you can just start from the beginning and catch up. Believe me, there's more than enough for everybody on all kinds of subjects, from UFOs to biology, to zoology, to geology, seismology, every kind of study that you can think of. And we're constantly going after better content. One of my listeners writes in and says, personally, the advantage to listening to X Squared Radio for me is I get to hear the most fantastic stuff ever. Well, that's good. It is fantastic stuff. By the way, fantastic, the root word is fantasy. But it's not really fantasy here. It's true. The solar wind is up to a brisk 365 kilometers per second, and the proton count has subsided to 2.0 protons per cubic meter. Sunspot 1174 and 1175 pose no threats for strong flares, although they are visible. The only one that occurred in the last 2 days went right past Earth, although the sunspot responsible for it was facing directly at Earth for quite some time. I'm telling you, we dodged a bullet with this one. This was a solar storm that would have wreaked havoc on a lot of sensitive electronics. We just missed it. A huge filament of magnetism and hot plasma blasted off the sun's southwestern limb 2 days ago around 1200, well, that would have been 1200 Utah time, I guess, or universal time. Today, or March 20th, is the date of the vernal equinox at 7:21 Eastern Daylight Time. The sun crosses the equator heading north. This marks the start of spring in the northern hemisphere and autumn in the southern hemisphere. Those of you that are working down there at the Vostok drilling site, you better start packing your gear because winter comes on quick down there. Happy equinox, people. The super full moon of March 19th was the biggest and closest full moon of the past 18 years. And it might also be the most photographed full moon ever. If you don't believe me, just go to Google and look at the pictures people are taking over London, over New York, over D.C., over L.A., over Berlin. Just amazing, amazing pictures of this moon. I remember a perigee moon. By the way, perigee means the closest full moon of a cycle to the Earth, as opposed to an apogee moon, as our closest cosmic neighbor and the Earth's only natural satellite. The moon has long been a symbol of mystery and intrigue. Spacecraft have been studying the moon for nearly 50 years, and lunar exploration has been an important benchmark in our nation's history. But there is still much to learn and many more questions to answer. Currently, NASA's only active mission at the moon is the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which launched in June of 2009. So that's the only one we've got going up there, and that's kind of a shock to me because it's so easy to study, and it has so much effect on the quality of our oceans, of our electronics, of the migrations and magnetic stability of our planet. We're going to discuss that more here in our first hour. But before I get into that, I just want to mention a couple of affiliates. We'll get this out of the way, and then we'll finish off this first hour. If you are looking to get prepared, and I know that the events that are occurring on the news are alarming, and perhaps they should be, because had you read The Ark of Millions of Years, the three-volume set, by the way, the fourth volume goes to the publisher tomorrow. The fourth volume is an update volume. It covers a lot of things that we predicted in the first three books that came true, not vaguely as we predicted them, but exactly as we predicted them. But it also recaps things that you might have missed in the first three books that have yet to come. And they're important because they could affect your safety, your quality of life, and your awareness, and we want you to be sovereign, we want you to be empowered, and so we want you to have this book. It's much smaller, it's going to be less expensive, because we want to get it out there to you in a hurry. So it should be off the presses in less than 45 days, and we'll get it out to you as quickly as possible. The affiliate that I'm talking about is our good friend, Paul Faust, in New York, and his firefighter and EMT buddies, who formed a website called 1-800-PREPARE.com. Why did they form it? Because after 9/11, they saw a great need for a ready source that's organized, that's affordable, that has free shipping, and has packaged the items that most people would need for a good emergency preparedness kit. A 72-hour kit, a 7-day kit, a 30-day supply of food, a 6-month supply of food, even a 2-year supply of food. And this food is packaged and prepared in such a way that you don't have to do anything to it for up to 25 years. This isn't something like rotating your pork and beans through the shelves. It isn't something like, rotating your potato chips and things like that. By the way, before I finish this alert, make sure you go to 1-800-PREPARE.com, my good friend Paul Faust. This is just in. It looks like British and or French forces have struck Gaddafi's compound and hit one of its administrative buildings at night, no less, showing Gaddafi that it doesn't matter what time of day or night. If they want to target him personally, they can. This is a very large compound. Libya is trying to say that Gaddafi was targeted personally. I would take it personally. Hello? Which allied forces responded by saying their policy is not to target heads of state or countries personally, blah, 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 blah. But that hit on the administrative building might have been a way of putting a scare into Gaddafi, a la Reagan, by letting him know if they wanted to, they could. So maybe Mr. Gaddafi will pull in his horns as he dusts the sheetrock off of his night clothes. We could get as close as we want to get. We know where he is at all times. All right, that's the end of my alert broadcast that just came in. A fan just sent that in. Evidently, they're watching the news for me and sending me in these alerts. So that is a courtesy of a fan on the East Coast. And there's another one coming in, but it's still being written, so I'll just hang in there. The reason that we want you to be prepared is, of course, we want you to take care of yourself. But we want you to be able to take care of your neighbors as well, your children, the elderly that are next to you, the widow. You know that they don't have a high-quality emergency preparedness kit. You know if something hits, a straight-line windstorm, a tsunami, an earthquake, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in this first hour, a power outage due to one of these solar tsunamis coming in. If air conditioning or heat goes out in one of these households with small children or elderly, it could be life-threatening. We want you to be able to not be a burden upon FEMA. I know that you've looked at the pictures along with everyone else within 8 hours of the disasters that we have seen on the news in the last 8 days. You saw people huddled in borrowed blankets sitting on the curb on the side of the street. The tsunami alarms went off. Some people had only a few minutes. Some people had a couple of hours. If you have a sealed up, packaged, ready to grab book bag, high quality, put together with a 72-hour kit in it by your front door, you could grab it and you could be gone up the road, walking, riding a bike, taking a car. You could take care of yourself and maybe one other person. This is how we want you to be empowered tonight. We want you to take care of yourselves. We want you to survive because we need you. And we want you to think of these things because you are important to us. So visit 1-800-PREPARE.com. And while you're checking out, put in the code word Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, and you'll get an extra 10% off. That's my gift to you. And we're so happy to have Paul Faust and 1-800-PREPARE.com. As an affiliate. You have also heard of the earthquakes that are happening. Now, I'm going to try to connect the dots here because You know, the news media has a tendency to run with a story as long as the batteries that run the lights will last. Once they die out, it's like, okay, let's go on to the next disaster. They never really sit down and connect the dots. They never bring in experts to talk about, okay, can these things be connected one to another in some way? Or is this just more disaster that we can put onto our screen? Well, here tonight on X Squared Radio for these 3 hours, we're not going to cover one disaster because it's just too much doom and gloom. What we are going to do, though, is we're going to connect the dots. And we're going to approach this from the point of view of what we wrote in the Ark of Millions of Years. If you haven't read it, you won't know what I'm talking about until I'm finished. If you have read it, you're going to know exactly what's coming, and you don't want to leave the radio right now. The devastating Japan earthquake is the latest in a series of what are called megaquakes over the past 7 years. Don't take my word for it. This is from University of Maryland geophysicist Laurent Montesi, an expert in earthquakes and related phenomena. Here's a quote. See if this sounds familiar, by the way. I am struck by the frequency of large seismic events we have been having since the 2004 Sumatra one, Montesi notes, considering the frequency occurrence of earthquakes in that country. This really means something. Now, you would think that someone would be able to connect the dots together. Someone would be looking at outside the box to see if there are more things that would tie into this. But, you know, PhDs, and gosh, I love them. I am one. But they have a tendency to know a lot about everything that would fit into a thimble. And everything outside that thimble is someone else's purview. But every once in a while, you got to pour the thimble out on the table with everybody else's thimbles and say, hey, some of our pieces are similar here. So let's go way outside the box. There is, on the moon, seismic activity connected with a lunar perigee. You know that we just had the perigee moon. It showed up last night. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that and tie it together. The seismic activities were detected by seismological instruments left on the moon by the Apollo astronauts. You remember, not just the first one, but all of them took seismological instruments up on the moon, set them up, and had to take a lot of classes in geology before they went to the moon. These instruments are still sending back information to Earth. There was, in effect, and it wasn't enormous, but the moon did quake near perigee. The moon will be a little closer than it was last year, about 1/4,000th of a percent closer, which can be significant when you're talking about 250,000 miles. And this comes from a Fox News report made by Johnston. The distance between the Earth and the Moon changes a lot in its orbit. Really, the only change is that it appears bigger when it's close. This coming full moon, the one we saw last night, will be the brightest of the year. Those of you that were out and saw it, especially when it was low in the sky, it's quite breathtaking, especially if you had a very low to the horizon look. You don't live in the city. You live out in the country where you've got a clear view down to the ground instead of a tree line, or even better, if you live on the coast and you've got it right down on the ocean. Boy, you can really see the size of it. We have made some observations relative to this, and when we connect these things together, the fact that we have a perigee moon very, well, closer to the Earth, and we have this, you know, rash of earthquakes, although this was denigrated on Fox News the other night. I'm going to read for you part of that Cavuto interview so that you can kind of judge for yourself who really won the arm wrestling here, Cavuto or Berkland. And then we'll connect the dots and we'll put these things together. So let me catch up on some of these chats here. We'll take 40 seconds and we'll be back with X Squared Radio. Get your seatbelt on because it's going to be good. Here we go. All right, I'm going to rub my index finger and put a little shame on the officials out there. The officials on the news are saying that people out there buying iodine pills and characterizing the people who are trying to prepare their emergency preparedness kits by including the iodine pills as the same people who go around putting aluminum shields on their heads to prevent aliens from controlling them. Okay, that's going a little bit too far. Everybody knows that the aluminum will protect you from aliens. No, I'm kidding. No, it does. I mean, I am kidding, but it does. Seriously, I'm not. No, the main thing is that the news media is making fun of people who are preparing. I would like to see the condition of these same news people's underwear when they're facing a 60-foot tsunami and they got to run for their lives and they haven't put anything together except maybe a couple TV dinners in their condo apartment on the 21st floor. It makes sense to be prepared, people. It's sad because the people in Japan who are in the danger zone and cannot acquire the pills would be grateful to have these pills on hand right now. Iodine pills will last forever. You can buy them at any camping store. They're used to purify water. Why iodine? Because it has a propensity for high energy neutrons. It will absorb the neutron, it will hold on to it, and if it decays, it sticks to the iodine. That's why you take iodine, people. Besides being a topical cure, an oral cure for tuberculosis, it is also a good thing to have in your bloodstream should you be exposed to high energy neutrons. Ultimately, people will be best served if they don't wait and they listen for instructions like these on X Squared Radio for when they should get prepared. And we have been telling you this for months. It's not as though we're new at this. We wrote books on it. We know what we're talking about. Okay, now let's see if we can connect the dots. Let's start way out there beyond the moon. Let's start with the solar storm that occurred just recently. This solar storm that caused a large geomagnetic reaction. Several electronics were disturbed. GPS was upset. The auroras in the northern climes were nothing short of amazing. Recent reports, and you heard them here on X Squared Radio, that the aurora borealis, that's the northern hemisphere aurora, was so bright that it competed with campfires for brightness. Now these are phenomenon, okay? These are not ordinary occurrences. They occur when the sun has unstable magnetic clots, like pimples, or strings that are just stretched as tight as they will go. Some of them are 3, 4, 5 times the diameter of the Earth. And when they snap, the other end pulls on it and it whips out into space, launching high energy particles out into space. If it happens to be facing in the zone where the Earth is going to pass through, in about 73 hours, those particles strike the upper atmosphere of Earth. Now, our magnetosphere routes those particles along the flux lines, just the same as any polarized particle would do in a magnetic field, and they rush in on the nearest pole. If they can make it around to the other side of the planet, they'll get sucked in on that pole as well, especially if there's an ion stream coming out of the Earth that attracts them. So if the particles make their way through that and they make it into the upper atmosphere, then they cause what are called cosmic rays. These are where the particles strike particles in our upper atmosphere, sputtering off electrons, which jump shells. And when they jump energy shells in those molecules or in those elements, then they put off photons. And those photons can be visible. Some of them are not visible, but some of them are visible, and they show up as light. They show up as these ribbons of light as these particles and various energies come through and strike the upper atmosphere. Some of them make their way all the way to the ground. Now, ordinarily, like in 1859, it wasn't that big of a deal, except for the hundreds and hundreds of miles of telegraph wire that we had stretched on poles almost from one end of the country to the other. It was the way that we communicated with dots and dashes. Basically, you had an electromagnet at one end, and what you did is you sent electrical pulses along the wire, which would then go through a coil at the other end, energizing an electromagnet and causing the handle to click back and forth. Short clicks were considered dots, and long-held clicks were considered dashes. Someone very adept at the Morse code could write the letters down pretty fast. And, of course, telegrams weren't wordy like our texts are today. And they had certain codes, and they had a way of saying stop. So instead of period, or this is where my sentence is ending now, I'm going to start another one, they just used the term stop. And, you know, the electrons would travel along the heavy wire from telephone pole or from pole to pole to station where the telegram could be written down or typed out and then delivered to whoever it was the recipient of it. Of course, everybody got to read it along the way, but that's the way it is. The point is, all we had was wire stretched around. And yet, this energy made it through our magnetosphere, through our atmosphere, and managed to find that wire stretched along the ground or stretched 30 feet above the ground on these telegraph wires, and which just acted like a big copper antenna. It picked up the power. The power went its way along the electrical wire toward ground, which was, of course, at the telegraph office. Well, we're talking about 100,000 volts per meter. So by the time you get a lot of that energy mounted up, you had people being electrocuted. You had people being shocked severely. You had telegraph offices that caught on fire because the copper got so hot from the electricity coursing its way to ground that the copper got red hot and caught the wooden building on fire, and the building burned. So the insulators weren't able to handle that much voltage because they weren't putting that much voltage on it. They were putting about 100 volts on these wires, and it wasn't prepared for that kind of voltage. Well, that was 1859. Now here we are in 2011, and we live in a little bit different society. We rely just a little bit more upon electronics. In fact, we rely almost completely upon electronics. Have you driven around lately? I mean, we used to be worried about having electronic ignition and computers in our cars. We thought, oh boy, here we go. We're going to have a big electromagnetic pulse, so I better keep an old distributor with the points in it and a condenser, so that if my electronic ignition goes out, I can pop that distributor out of my motor, I can pop this one down in, hook up an old-fashioned coil to it, and I can drive my car. You know what? You could not feel injected anymore, but you could a carbureted car because the technology was pretty simple. It only worked off of differential pressure in the intake manifold, about minus 23 inches of water, and it literally siphoned the gas out of a bowl, out of little straws, atomized it in Venturi, spread it around an intake manifold, sucked it into the combustion chamber through an intake valve, slammed the valve shut, compress it to about one-tenth of its original volume, spark it, let it explode, shoving the piston down and driving the car forward. So now you know how a four-stroke engine works. Well, we don't have that anymore. Today, if a car doesn't start, there's at least 100 reasons why not. It could be the fuel management system. It could be the throttle positioner. It could be the oil sensor. I mean, there's so many things tied into it, and as if all that doesn't work, you also have an electronic fuel pump sitting inside a pool of gasoline in your car. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make you nervous, but that's exactly the way your car is built. So the car itself relies a lot upon a stable electrical environment. If there's a bad lightning storm, a good place to be is in your car. Not a convertible. It's got to be a steel car. Why? Because the car acts like a Faraday chamber. It acts like a cage where lightning can strike the outside of it, and a phenomenon called the skin effect allows all that power to route around the outside of the vehicle and go to ground, and you'll be safe on the inside of the vehicle. You might pee your pants, but you'll be safe. If lightning strikes your car, you'll know what I'm talking about. That's why airplanes rarely have problems. They get struck by lightning every year, but it rarely, if ever, brings an airplane down, because the electricity doesn't go through the plane. It goes around the outside of the plane in a phenomenon known as the skin effect. So, and it really doesn't matter how big the bolt is. The bigger the bolt, the easier it flows around the outside. If you don't believe me, you could witness it for yourself. I highly recommend, more than just about any other site that you could go see, if you are near Boston, you need to go to the Boston Museum of Science. At the Boston Museum of Science, they have the two largest Van de Graaff generators in the world. They're old, but they still generate millions of volts. And one of the most exciting things that they do at the Boston Museum of Science is they do a lightning show, and you get to watch it. Yeah, you get to watch 15-foot lightning bolts jumping through the air, snapping into a cage where an operator stands without harm. And he's used to it, but you could do the same thing in your car. Now, the other thing that upon which we rely even more, that's why I said, have you driven lately, is the darn cell phones. Oh my gosh, cell phones, iPads, iPods, you name it. We've got microelectronics in our pocket. I was out riding my motorcycle last night, just riding along. No, I wasn't eating cookies and drinking milk, but I was minding my own business. I have a carbureted bike, and I'm behind a car that is pausing at every green light. The light turns green, and the car waits about 10 seconds. Has the girl fallen asleep? No. She's texting. Well, one of the advantages you have riding a bike that you don't have as a car is you don't really have to use the horn. You can yell at them, which is what I did. Hey, get off the phone, drive your car. Hey, quit texting and drive your car. I mean, come on, I don't have bumpers. I don't have doors. I don't have airbags or seat belts. I'm at the mercy of all those cars on the road, and I want your eyes on it, okay? Because although I pretend I'm invisible, I don't really want to be invisible to you. I want you to know I'm here. And she didn't. So it was justice in the end, because after six traffic lights, who pulled in behind me? Yeah, you got it. Johnny Law. And he threw his blue lights on. I looked at my mirror, and he motioned for me to pull into the parking lot, which I did. He passed me up, and he pulled her over, driving while distracted. I loved it. It was great. So the point is that we rely a lot on our electronics, okay? We do. And if a solar storm hits like what we had in 1859, and it will, That's why we have the Solar Dynamics Observatory up there right now. It will. We need that 73 hours of warning. Because you'll remember, last week was the anniversary of the giant blackout across Canada and the northern part of the United States during the last geomagnetic storm sent to us by the sun. We weren't ready for it that time. We didn't have the SDO up at that time. We just had little old SOHO up there, just a little broadband digital detector, and it was probably being baked out at the time that the solar storm occurred. This time, we're ready. This time, we can see it. When it goes off and it starts heading for Earth, we've got about 73 hours, unless it's an extremely high-energy blast. Then cut that in half, 37 hours, just a little over one day. And that's where your aluminum hats come in. No, I'm kidding. This is where you probably need to protect those good electronics that you have. If you have any friends that have bought any electronic components, and I'm talking about circuit boards, transistors, capacitors, things like that, they come in a baggie, but the baggie is very special. It's kind of smoky silver. The reason this baggie looks like that is because that baggie has a very micron thin coating of metal in the plastic, in the polyester, or in the polyethylene. The reason that's important is it creates a skin effect around the bag. It protects the electronics inside of it from static charge, the kind of static charge it would face on, say, a rubber belt in a freight handling situation, or being handed from one person to another that's walking along. If you can get your hands on some of these bags, and they're everywhere, you can get them at Radio Shack, you can get them at Walmart, you can get them everywhere. Get your hands on a few of these bags, and when the storm begins to come, drop your cell phone in the bag. It'll still work. It'll still work. Just drop it in the bag, and it'll protect itself from that. You can also put it inside your microwave oven. It has a pretty good cage around it, too. All right, let's see if we can't kick this up a notch a little. Let's go to the phones. Let's do Chris from California on line two. Welcome to the program, sir.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, sir. Welcome.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I love your show. I'm just a new participant to BBS Radio, and I love the station, love your show, and I recently bought and read your book, Remembering the Future, and I thought it was magnificent. I tip my hat to you, Brooks.
Wow, I really appreciate that. That's a great compliment. What was your favorite part of the book?
I love the part in the beginning when you're talking about the secret and how it was less than effective, and that through your experiences and then the Merkaba meditation, which is not an easy road to hoe, let me tell you, that you and we all can manifest whatever we desire in this lifetime, and I think it's wonderful.
Well, I appreciate it. Go ahead. You got a question already.
Yeah, my question to you with regards to that book, and I'm sorry if this is off topic a little, what have you been manifesting in your life, I'd like to know, and how did you use the meditation to further the joy and love in your life?
Well, that's a great question. I started with simple stuff at first. You know, after I interviewed the people that I did for the book, and it was the basis of proving out my mathematical theories between resonance, the golden mean, and the Fibonacci process, not the sequence, but the process, I decided to start small. So the first thing that I said was, well, I'd like to have a motorcycle. I used to ride one when I was younger. My kids are grown, and I wanted to buy a motorcycle. And so I said, well, if I'm going to make this work, I got to be very specific. I'm going to follow, you know, the guidelines of the book. So I said, okay, I want, I'm thinking of a Honda Shadow 1100. It's purple. It's got less than 10,000 miles on it, and it costs less than $5,000. Well, my friend said, there's no way you're going to find that bike. I mean, Shadows are, you know, first of all, they cost more than that. Second of all, they got more miles than that. And what are the odds of finding a purple one? I mean, get out of here. You're being too specific. You got to open it up a little bit. I said, no, if this is going to work, I am going to put that out there. And that's what I'm going to meditate on, at least for a couple of minutes each week. And so that's what I did. And one day I was just prompted. I was at work. Okay. I was at work. And I pulled up eBay. And I just looked up motorcycles. Right there on the first page was a purple Shadow 1100, 6,000 miles on it, $5,400. I bought it right then. Boom. Just like that. Now, the story behind it, I had to go get it, which was in another city about 100 miles away. So I rented a van and I drove over there. And when I got there, I learned the story. This young man had bought the motorcycle. He already had a dirt bike, but he bought the motorcycle from a doctor who rode it on Sundays, didn't put many miles on it. It was about, I don't know, 10 years old at the time. And the following weekend after buying that bike, he shattered his ankle driving his dirt bike. It took 2 years to heal. I mean, he really messed it up bad. In that 2 years, he gets married to his high school girlfriend and starts college. He's 1 year into college, and his wife says, you're selling that bike. And he's like, yeah. So she put it on the internet. 2 hours later, I bought it.
Wow. What an incredible story.
Oh, there's another one. There's another one. I'm up in the Northwest, okay, snow country, in the desert of Washington State, building a biodiesel plant. My Dodge Dakota has 375,000 miles on it. It's on its last leg. It's just limping along. I mean, I'm pouring water in it every other day. It starts and runs, but it's coming apart. So I said to the guys, I want to buy a new truck, but not a new one. I'm not going to make payments on anything. I'm going to pay cash for it. And I'd saved up a little bit of money. So they said, well, what are you going to buy? Because they're all truck guys too. Well, I want to buy a 5.9 liter Dodge, but I want a two-wheel drive, and I really like the color green. So, you know, because I was teaching them this method too, and they were kind of playing with it. They said, well, first of all, you're not going to find a two-wheel drive pickup here in the Northwest. Everybody drives four-wheel drives. Second of all, there's no way you're going to find a one like that for less than $10,000. I want to spend less than $10,000. And I think it was 2 or 3 days later, maybe it was 2 weeks later. What is the circular that comes out? It's it's one of the car flyers. It's free. You can pick it up at a Minute Mart. Anyway, one of the guys picked up a bunch of those and was going through it at lunch with us. And he says, holy crap. I said, what? He said, here is a 1999 Dodge 3/4 ton Ram, two-wheel drive. It's a 5.9 liter turbo automatic, and it's green. I said, let's go. So we loaded up. He and I got in the Dakota. We drove down to the Idaho border, walked into the used car dealer, and there it was. It had 5-inch exhaust all the way out, just like I wanted. It had a chip on it like I wanted. It was missing an air cleaner, so we took one off one of the other trucks. I traded in my truck and bought it for $9,500. I'm still driving.
Incredible.
So it works with things. That's the easy part, but that's the low-hanging fruit, Chris, I'm telling you. So the next thing that I decide to manifest, this is, I guess I'm just putting together the manuscript for the book, and I'm testing out the theories, is I want to start this electric car company. And I had a few bumps on it because I started manifesting the money, which was dumb. It was totally counter to the theory. So my team and I have gotten together. Now we're doing, remember when I said in the book, if we get one person to focus on it, it's good. Two, it's great. A million is good. A billion is better. My whole team, at the same time every day, about 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock my time, We are meditating on the outcome of the electric car company at the same time. And we're all starting to see things. And things are beginning to move in that direction. Now, what you got to remember is to concentrate and leave all the revenue channels open. You can't say it has to come a certain way or I'm not taking it. Or you have to be open to every, keep your eyes open. The key is the Merkaba meditation, and here's why. Because the world gets really noisy. It gets noisy with kids and bills and your job and relationships between women and men, and it just gets noisy. And most people are busy these days. Goodness knows I'm busy. I don't have time to become a monk for 90 days to make something manifest and happen. I got to have something that's efficient, consistent, and works. And that's why I use the Merkaba meditation. The way Drunvalo Melchizedek presented it to me, and the way Maureen St. Germain taught the two advanced classes to me, it makes sense. It's easy to do. It's 17 breaths in a row, and you're in. And then I developed the 18th breath. It was important because I needed a maintenance breath, because sometimes you want to meditate just a little bit longer than 17 breaths. You're looking for a deeper answer. You're listening. And I find during that 11 or 12 minutes that it takes to do this, I can hear things more clearly in the universe. I get pictures, I get sounds, I get like premonitions, yeah, but I mean I get promptings to do things like opening up eBay that day at work, or buying the car magazine at the Minute Mart from my friend, or my friend picking that up because he knew what I was looking for. Those promptings come, and you'll know when they come because they'll feel like they resonate with the dream that you've put out there. And that's why the Merkaba meditation works.
With respect to the Merkaba meditation and your book, magnificent book, you speak about 8 iterations, and you explain why 8 iterations is very important, but you don't really go into the details on when you get that feedback from the universe after you sent out your first intention. And that's something that's, I know it's intuitive, but that's something that's very difficult to discern for the average person like me.
Yeah, it is. And I have thought about expanding that, but I want to leave the intuition open. And I've thought a lot about that. You know, okay. I've hit the bell with a hammer, I let go, and it's ringing. Now, most people will just sit there and listen to the bell ringing. What I try to do in the book is get you to listen to what is sympathetically resonating with the bell. Like, that's why I use the example of the guitar leaning up against the wall, and you turn the stereo up really loud, it sounds like one of the strings on the guitar gets plucked like someone hit it with a pick. You don't have the guitar hooked up to the stereo, but the stereo is sending out all kinds of wavelengths, and only those that resonate with that guitar string are making it ring. So what you got to do is listen for the guitar strings out there in the universe and not so much the bell that you just rang. It's a little difficult to explain. It's sort of like you work a job for a couple of years and you think everything's okay, and you tell your wife, there's no way they're going to fire me. I'm indispensable now. And Friday they hand you your pink slip. Well, you go, well, what did I do?
You put the intention.
Yeah, well, that too. You could say, what did I do wrong? Well, you didn't do anything wrong. The company is going in another direction. We're closing. We're selling. We're eliminating that job. We don't like you. I mean, lots of things can cause that firing, that disconnect. So the first thing that happens is we have this wave of despair come over us. And I call that the undertow. This is when the universe is sucking everything back out to sea and the wave is getting ready to come in. Well, if you've got your head down all worried about how God has cursed you, you're just going to get smashed by the wave. What you got to be is a surfer. Get on the board, turn it around, look over your shoulder, and get ready to ride. Because the phone's going to ring, a job's going to be presented on Monster or in the newspaper, and it's going to be just right for you. I have yet to speak to a person that has been fired in the last 10 years that hasn't found something better and would never have found it had that firing not occurred. They would have stayed.
That's a fantastic point. One last question. I apologize for taking so much of your time. With respect to your new, with your expedition, can your listeners not all collectively harmonize and meditate and bring you the funds that are required for your expedition?
Wow, that's exactly what my staff said last week. That's pretty amazing, that's Chris.
That's what I've been thinking about nonstop. And these days, when I'm meditating, and I meditate 4 hours a day, when I'm meditating, last night, I felt as though I was at the moon, and I have done astral voyages, and I felt my whole body shaking. I don't know if it was a pre-Kundalini experience. Could have been, but I'm not technically aware of those things. But my whole body was shaking beyond control. And my wife said, "What is happening to you? You're going nuts on me." After when I got out of bed, she said, "You're shaking in bed. What's happening? What's wrong with you?" I said, "I was just meditating. I don't know. I didn't know I was shaking. I couldn't feel my body. My body became heavy as lead, and my inner being was so light. I was floating. I was a feather, and it was an incredible feeling." But I didn't want to disturb my better half, of course. So well, I wanted to ask you, how could we make it so that we all focus our intention on your expedition and help the process along? Because we want it to happen. We love to go online and look at the video updates, and we want it to happen. I've been thinking about it nonstop.
Well, you're not the only one. My staff has said exactly the same thing. And Dylan has just redone the NIPI website, the NIPI.org website. I mean, we just launched it a couple days ago.
Now, fantastic site.
Thanks so much. I will definitely pass that on to him. He's probably listening tonight. But what we're going to do is we're going to put – I don't want to copy anyone. I don't want to do like a global intention thing. But – I like your idea, and it resonates so well with what we have already discussed. I think I'm going to take your advice. I'm going to pick a date in the very near future. We're going to post it on the website. I'll push it out on Facebook. I'll talk about it a couple times on the radio. You can spread the word, and we'll get 10,000, 10 million people to all meditate on the same theme at one time. And let's see if we can't turn this thing over and make it happen. You know, that would be a great demonstration of the theory, because this is, if there ever was an impossible expedition, this is it. I mean, what could be more impossible? Going to the moon? Yeah, I think so, maybe. But we've been to the moon. We just haven't been to this region of the Earth.
What a wonderful idea. I can't wait to see the positive results. And to all those people who don't think it's going to happen, I say, wait, it will. I can't wait to experience that. Let me know. I'll be the first one in line, ready to hum.
All right.
I'm sending my positive vibrations to you, your team, your expedition, your radio, all your projects. I mean, you have 1,000 things going on. I wish you nothing but peace and love and harmony.
Excellent. I appreciate it so much, Chris. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Earth Explorers, I can't say enough. We will take a quick break right now. We'll listen to a song. This is actually done by the Portland Girls Philharmonic Choir. It is a song that a little 10-year-old girl is the lead singer and plays violin in it. It is a song about Atlantis going under the sea. We'll be back in about 5 minutes. Go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back.
Lost and left behind.
Portland Philharmonic Girls Choir. Lead singer is 10 years old. Absolutely phenomenal little girl. She sang at the opening ceremonies of the Earth Transformation Conference at Trout Lake, Washington in 2006. Absolutely phenomenal. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew, coming to you live from southern Mississippi. Today's AccuWindow forecast, it was 82. Absolutely stunning weather today. Light breeze off the Gulf. Peregrine moon last night. It may still be bright and traversing the sky as we speak if you want to step outside and look at it. Lots of great things in the heavens going on. I want to finish off what I was talking about in the last hour. In fact, we may take this whole hour to do it. The solar storm that occurred about a week and a half ago, it did cause a fairly large geomagnetic storm. Fortunately, it only disrupted very slightly radio and cell phone communications, a little bit of GPS upset. Rather stunning aurora borealis, the aurora in the northern hemisphere. But we came so close. I mean, just we're looking down the gun barrel here in solar cycle 24. Fortunately, we have the Solar Dynamics Observatory. It's a stereographic observatory where we can actually look at the sun from two different perspectives at the same time. Two different camera angles that gives us, much like human vision, where we have two eyes looking at something and we can get depth. And there are a lot of reasons why we put the observatory up there. SOHO was not really doing it for us. We had to bake it out even more and more. It was aging, and it's been quite hammered by a lot of solar protons, and it was getting old. So the SDO is giving us tremendous data right now, and we're able to watch the sun on an ongoing basis. Yes, even at night. Come on, people. And that'll give us about a 73-hour lead on what to do. Now, I'm telling you, it does not give you enough time to run down to Walmart and buy some supplies. So we're asking you, advising you here on X Squared Radio, visit our friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com and get your kits together. Get a 72-hour kit at least. If you've got more than one member in your family, guess what? One 72-hour kit's not enough. By the time time you drink that sterile water, by the time you eat the few meals that are in there, for two or three people, you're going to be out of stuff, and you're going to be relying on FEMA. And that's what we're asking you not to do. Just prepare for yourself, okay? Your income tax return check is coming back, your earned income credit, your whatever. Think a little bit ahead, just a little bit ahead, and go there and get prepared. By the way, when you're checking out, put in my name, Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, and you'll get a 10% discount on the way out. It works. I tried it. I got the stuff myself. I enjoy it. The kit was very high quality, and it's set it and forget it. I don't have to do a thing to it if I don't want to for 25 years. I can grab it anytime in the next 25 years, or I can give it to somebody as a gift so that they can be prepared. There's a good idea for you. Now, we're going to start connecting the dots here. First, we had the Japanese volcano eruption. Now, this volcano has been dormant for a little better than 200 years. Volcanic smoke rose from the crater on Mount Shinmodake in the Kirishima Range on Japan's southernmost main island of Kyushu on Tuesday, February 1st. The revived volcano in southern Japan erupted with its biggest explosion yet, shooting out a huge plume of gas boulders and ash and breaking windows 5 miles away. 5 miles away. This was no small event. This wasn't just a little rumble. Of course, it wasn't at Mount St. Helens, but it was a wake-up call. If you want to go on and look up that volcanic eruption, the photographs are absolutely stunning of this. A short time later, in the early part of March, we have the 8.9 earthquake in Japan. Not just that day, but the following day, there were more than 100 earthquakes. 60 of them were over 5. There were 59 earthquakes. This is twice the normal amount. By the way, those critics that are out there writing on my YouTube channel at X Squared Radio, saying that increased numbers and intensity of earthquakes, as is represented in the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition Part 1 film that's on YouTube, are exaggerated and may be on the verge of being fraudulent. That wasn't my data. That data came from the USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey. Okay? There were 59 quakes in the last 24 hours, with 16 of them over 5.0. And this was from Tonga through Taiwan and on to Honshu. The earth is still ringing hard. Now, most recently, how about yesterday? Yesterday, there was a 6.1 in Japan. 11 hours ago, another one at 5.8. And just 6 hours ago, one at 5.3. Earth explorers, these are all significant quakes. These are not just aftershocks. These are quakes in and of themselves. Okay? We are in brand new seismological territory here. I'll tell you why. Because the coastlines are being affected the most. And those of you that listen to this program, that's no surprise. We've been talking about it here for months. More recently, we've really been intense on it. You remember when I was on Camelot Radio with Carrie Cassidy just a few weeks ago. And if you want to go back and listen to that, you can listen to the castigation minute by minute, blow by blow, as I took everything that could be dished out and defended my position. That the coastlines are dangerous. I said on that program, go to the beach, get a tan, take some pictures, and leave. Get the heck out of there, because there's a tsunami coming. And she said, well, I live on the beach. I really don't know what to tell you. I think if you want to sit in your living room and watch it come, at least you're empowered to do so. It's not going to take you by surprise because you heard about it right here on X Squared Radio. The coastlines are being affected the most because the ocean is resonating with this energy that's out there beyond our solar system that's coming through our heliosphere, through our solar system, and is affecting all the planets in the solar system. Earth just happens to be the only one with liquid water on the surface, and water is resonating with this energy. The rogue waves that have been occurring for millennia usually go from pole to pole, parallel to all the continents. They don't really cause any problems unless you're out at sea in a big ship. Then you're going to have your iced tea rolled over on the floor. If you don't believe me, go to YouTube. You can see videos of it. All kinds of cruise ships being swamped or rocked severely, not swamped, water in the windows certainly, by these rogue waves. They're 90-footers sometimes, traveling subsonic. They'll swell because they're, I'd say a mile in a mile in wavelength. And as they cross under the boat at 300, 400 miles an hour, they raise the boat up like a giant swell, and you're going up the crest, over the top, and down the other side, and the boat is going to lean with the sea level, especially if it's broadside to it. And it's occurring. But it used to occur about once or twice a year. Now, maritime records are showing they're occurring once or twice a month. The frequency is increasing. And if these waves begin turning perpendicular to the shores instead of parallel to the shores, you are going to see some tsunamis like these earthquakes are not capable of generating. You are going to see tsunamis 300, 400 meters high, 900 to 1,000 feet high, traveling at 300 miles an hour plus. By the time, if you had your car idling in your driveway, filled with supplies, headed toward the freeway, by the time you saw the wave, got in the car, and hit the gas, it's over. All right, famous for predicting the San Francisco quake of 1989, Mr. Berkland was on the Cavuto show on Fox News. Quote, "The months of October, March, and April are the three most devastating earthquakes in terms of damage in the San Francisco Bay Area in history. And we're having, on the 19th of this month, not only the full moon, but within an hour, the closest approach of the moon until the year 2016. And the next day is the equinoctial tide, bringing together three of the maximum tide-raising forces. And we know about the ocean tides, but there's also an earth tide, and there's a tide in the groundwater, and all of these help to release built-up strain and cause earthquakes." Berkland also noted strange animal behavior. He goes on to say, well, if it was in the Northwest and Cascadia Trench, like we had in 1700, that would be a 9-magnitude quake. I'm not predicting that. But I'm just saying we've had a massive fish kill. Maybe a million fish died at Redondo Beach, California. They had massive fish sweep in Mexico. We just had a bunch of whales coming close to San Diego. So he goes on to cite this strange animal behavior in the last few weeks. And although Cavuto excoriated him on the program and said there was absolutely no correlative data between perigee moon approaches and earthquakes, the Japanese quake happened anyway. The frequencies are coming into the solar system and are affecting all the planets of the solar system. Earth is most sensitive because of the liquid water that's on the surface. And we're closely watching the sun like never before. Obviously, it's the largest body in our solar system by many times. It is also a balance between a fusion explosion and a gravity collapse. It happens to be a middle-aged sun, and it is yellow and provides just the right wavelength to promote life and not destroy it. On Earth, we happen to have a magnetosphere and an ionosphere and an atmosphere which protects the surface of the Earth from germicidal ultraviolet radiation. And so everything, all the way down to the simplest bacteria, can survive in this kind of light. Everything on the Earth is responding to these frequencies. Now, these frequencies are different than what the Earth has been exposed to the previous 25,000 years. We're completing a 26,000-year precession through the zodiac. We're coming through the age of Pisces, and in about 1 year, 8 months, we're going to enter the age of Aquarius. Traditionally, this has been considered an age of enlightenment. Aquarius is supposed to be a new beginning, perhaps a shift into a higher dimension. We mention this in the books simply because this is the tradition that has been recorded by so many civilizations. not necessarily from an astrological point of view, that is to say, the 12 signs of the zodiac and their various personalities, but from a cosmological point of view. That is to say, our solar system has an oscillation up and down through the galactic plane of the Milky Way galaxy. The theory that there is a supermassive spinning black hole in the center of the Milky Way galaxy still has not been disproven. And believe me, a lot of people are looking at it. Now, one of the things that is remarkable is that with the, the evidence that points toward the existence of an additional source of matter in the universe, we call it dark matter, but I hesitate to do that because the only reason we call it dark matter is because we can't see it. It might be a little arrogant for us to do that. Perhaps it's super bright matter. Perhaps it's other dimensional matter that has an effect on our dimension as well. You know, gravity is a pretty vague and mysterious quality, even though it's one of the four major forces of the universe. Gravity, electromagnetism, and the strong and weak molecular forces. On the quantum level, gravity doesn't exist. On the macro level, it does exist, but we still can't explain it. We really don't understand how solar systems form. We don't understand how orbits are set up the way they're set up. We don't see them forming. We see them coming apart sometimes, but we don't really see them forming. And we don't understand how toroidal gravitational forces extend over vast distances of space. You know, the moon is 250,000 miles away from Earth. Earth is 93 million miles from our sun. But if you get out there a ways, a billion miles or so, you wouldn't expect the sun to have any kind of body out there revolving around it. You wouldn't think that its gravitational pull would go that far. I mean, if we launch a spacecraft from Earth to the moon, we will find the Lagrangian point where the moon is pulling on the spacecraft just as hard as the Earth. And within just a few miles, the moon's gravity is going to be stronger than Earth's. And we'll rely on the moon's gravity to pull us forward toward the moon. Hopefully, we do that at a slight angle so that we can fall into an orbit around it. But that's the way gravity is used in space, and we've proven it. We've done it. We've launched spacecraft using that theory all the way outside the heliosphere. So we know it works. But we also realize that our sun is revolving around another sun. Yeah, our sun is revolving around a sun called Sirius. Now, it's not really revolving around the star Sirius that we see, but it's revolving around a much more dense and smaller star that's very close to it. So it might as well be in the same region, the Summer Triangle. How do we know that? Well, because the pyramids were built several thousand years ago. Some people say 5,000 years ago. Some people say 10,000 years ago. And now there are theories that are fairly solid, backed by very solid engineering and geology, 13,500 years ago. Makes sense. But even in that day, the pyramid was precisely aligned with the star Sirius, as it is today. Well, if we have been marching through the precession for the last 26,000 years, you know, now Draconis is no longer our pole star. Now we rely on Polaris as our pole star, our north star. If the north star is changing, which is the one star we don't see moving in the heavens now, how could we still be aimed at Sirius? It's because we're revolving around Sirius. That's why. Sirius and our sun appear to be binary stars. But how can that be? Because we're numerous light years apart. Not millions of miles, trillions of miles away. We're light years apart from Sirius. So there's evidence that there is a toroidal magnetism, a toroidal gravity that connects bodies together over vast distances of space. We perceive it as distance, but if you'll read in Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, you'll realize that in one respect, the Big Bang never happened. At the speed of light, this entire universe has no distance at all. Everything is local. It's only our consciousness, our awareness, that has slowed everything down to the point where we can perceive it one moment at a time. From a toroidal gravitational point of view, it's connected locally. There is no distance between Sirius and Earth at the speed of light. And gravity moves many times the speed of light. There are lots and lots of theoretical physics and imaginary scenarios whereby we can prove this. And we'll be happy to do it if you want to call in. By the way, I forgot to announce the numbers. Let me go back and do that. If you want to be part of the program, and we encourage you to do so, you can reach us at 530-413-4511. Or if you're east of Earth, 530-413-4515. Or if you're west of Earth, 530-413-4520. And by the way, we have a lot of listeners in Australia. Lots of listeners in Australia. I don't even know if we're the number one program in Australia, but lots of people listen to this program. And they buy a lot of books. And I realize that it's the wrong time there. But if you're up in the morning over there on Monday, down under, give us a call. Because we'd love to have you. And if you want to reach me on Skype, you can do so. I'm at X2-Radio. And you can send me chats during the program on Skype, and I'll be happy to respond to them. I'll read them if that's what you wish me to do. And I get all kinds of interaction that way. I wish that I could be in the chat room on the website at xsquaredradio.com. Our mediator, Eileen, is doing a wonderful job there, keeping everybody communicating one with another. And I hope that in the chat room, they're being encouraged, if they really want to get something out to the show rather than just the listeners of the program. By the way, I use the word show. I'm spanking my own hand because this is not a show. It's a program. We do talk about the mysteries of the universe and of the earth. And although it is entertaining, I do it as a hobby. I do it because I feel driven to do it. The last 5 years, I get up every week and put together content to bring to you on the radio. Oftentimes we will have expert guests on the program who will talk about their books and their works, and we'll have wonderful scientific discussions on the program. And you're along for the listen, and we appreciate it. So I know that you're out there, and I appreciate you. I appreciate your emails, your chats. If you want to reach me at Skype, you can do so. It's x2-radio.com. And if you missed any of tonight's program, you can always purchase the archives. Two different places, actually. You can get the archives at bbsradio.com, which gives you access to all the hosts at the BBS Radio on all channels. It's well worth the value. If you want the stereo high-resolution version of X Squared Radio, you can always go to xsquaredradio.com, click on the subscribe button. It's only $20 a year. All it does is help us pay for the airtime. We make $0 on the radio program, and even if we did, you'd just be helping me put my son through college. So it is a gift. It is a love. It is a hobby. It's a study that I like doing, and it's sort of like a book report every week, which you should try sometime. 52 books a year. It's fun to do. Now, these frequencies that are coming into the Earth are having effects on all kinds of levels. They're having effects on the planet itself, which is resonating with some of these frequencies, on the water itself, the oceans, which are building up these giant resonance waves that are called rogue waves, And they are going to result in tsunamis. And they are going to be surprising. I can tell you, by the time the tsunami alarm goes off in Southern California, you're going to have enough time to pack one TV dinner and get out if the 10 isn't six lanes of parked cars, which it is every morning at 7 o'clock. Pray that it doesn't come during rush hour. Pray that it does not. Tomorrow is the first day of spring, actually, in just a little bit here. It's 2 hours into spring, technically speaking. The perigee moon occurred yesterday, and it'll be glorious again tonight. Full moons vary in size because of the oval shape of the moon's orbit, and it's a slow orbit. It takes 28 days plus to go around the Earth. The moon also revolves on its own axis once every 28 days. So the same side of the Earth, same side of the moon always faces the Earth. It is an ellipse with one side, perigee, about 50,000 kilometers closer to Earth than the other side, apogee. Simple. It's an oval. Right now, the Earth is in the skinny part of the, or the moon is in the skinny part of the oval with respect to Earth, about 50,000 kilometers closer to Earth, and that's why it appears larger. When it's low in the horizon and full and the skies are clear, it can be huge because the atmosphere that you're looking laterally through instead of straight out the short way a few miles into space, you're looking long ways, way, way, way across the ocean over the horizon to the moon, and that's what makes it jump out at you. So large. Nearby perigee moons are about 14% bigger and about 30% brighter than lesser moons that occur on the apogee side of the moon's orbit when the orbit's really, really far out there. Now, the moon, it is theorized, is about one-sixth the size of the Earth, and it is theorized one-sixth the gravity of Earth. And yet, being so close and revolving the way that it does, the Earth revolves once every 24 hours on its axis, so we have this low-gravitational neighbor that's tugging on the Earth. We call it tidal gravity. It doesn't mean what you think it means. You see it as a result of tides, the ocean going up and down, in and out, relative to the Earth's position to the moon. But it also means to stretch and to shrink. So what we're actually doing, the moon is actually moving the crust of the Earth. It's squeezing it in and it's stretching it out. Just like any planet would do as it approaches another planet. The leading edge will have more gravity pulling toward that planet than the far edge will. And so the effect is to kind of elongate that planet on the side that's facing the other gravitational body. It's called tidal gravity. If the body is much larger than the smaller body, and it happens to get inside what's called the LaRoche limit. The LaRoche limit is one diameter of the larger planet. So if you had a planet that was, say, the size of Jupiter, and you had something like a comet approaching Jupiter, when it got to within one diameter of Jupiter from Jupiter, the comet will no longer be able to maintain its internal gravity, and it will come apart into pieces. This is what happens when planets approach each other. They don't slam into each other as solid balls. The smaller planet, or should I say, the less dense planet, will come apart. Its own gravity will be overcome by the gravity of the larger body, or the more dense body, I'm just going to call it a gravitational diameter, and it will come apart. It'll come apart just like a dirt clod in a pond. It will just dissolve. And fortunately, the moon is much further away from the Earth than the diameter of the Earth. The Earth is about 7,200 miles in diameter, and the moon is about 250,000 miles away. So no worry of the Earth dissolving in orbit, okay? But the result is, of this mild stretching and squeezing, is that we have tides, because we have a liquid portion of our planet that responds very readily to that, and we have earthquakes. The crust moves around like a soap bubble in space relative to this focal point of gravity that's facing the moon. And these stresses are placed into the crust, and usually the crust can respond to it just by a mild flex or a little tremor here or tremor there. Usually about every 24 hours, there are 30, almost exactly 30 earthquakes over 2.5 on the Richter scale. The USGS pretty much covers the whole planet from the South Pole to the North Pole. All of those listening stations are tied together into one system called the USGS, or the United States Geological Survey. Every time there's a very large quake, the vibrations go through the planet or around the crust and are picked up on by other seismological listening stations around the planet. And we're capable of doing sort of a CAT scan of the Earth, where vibrations are sent through the Earth. They reflect off various structures. And as they're picked up on the other side, we get what's called a seismogram. Now, the guys at Washington University, Dr. Y. Sessions, is the professor that ran the study. They compiled and crunched the data for 600,000 of these seismograms, using, of course, low-cost grad students. And I'm sure some of those grad students starved to death along the way. I know I did. I was revived several times, passed out in the lab in the middle of the night. Anyway, the results of that study was that another ocean was discovered underneath the Atlantic Ocean. The damping waves, that is to say the waves that lap against the shore, put off a mild vibration which is picked up by this USGS. And when there's an earthquake, as the waves zip through solid rock, bounce around inside of hollow areas, they strike liquid areas and they're dampened. Okay, it's sort of like crashing a car into a lake. It can go right along the highway really well. It'll smash through a tree, but you hit water, and the force is dampened by a liquid absorption. In other words, the point load that you would normally feel, like a hammer striking a nail on that point, is dissipated in infinite number of directions in the water and absorbed. And those damping waves were detected by this study of 600,000 seismograms by Dr. Y. Sessions and his grad students at Washington University. So we know that the structure of Earth is quite varied all the way through the Earth. We also know that the crust has been expanding for a long, long, long time. There's a theory out there called the expanding crust theory. It says that the Earth was once one-third its present diameter, that all of the continents fit together in one solid body, and that the Earth was almost completely covered by water. When the crust began to come apart and separate, and the sea floor began forming, some of it 4,000, 5,000 meters deep, the oceans receded from the dry land, leaving behind layers and layers and layers and layers of fossils, of ancient fossilized hydrocarbons, bacteria becoming oil, leaves and trees and things becoming shale, all of that left behind on dry land, and the relatively new seafloor filling in the gaps with molten material cooling underneath the water. And as the Earth was very, very cold, as it began to cool off, all of the methane in the atmosphere condensed, ended up at the bottom of the ocean, where it still remains in liquid form, pressurized under the bottom of the deepest oceans. Much of the remaining CO2 was turned into oxygen by the algae, making life possible here on Earth. Because you need to have water and you need to have oxygen. We have both because of those two events. Now, there are some geologists who do not agree with this. They have other theories. They believe we live on a molten ball of rock, and we float around on tectonic plates, which are smashing into each other like cornflakes in a bowl of milk. And where these flakes or plates are rubbing up against each other is the Pacific Rim and other volcanically and tectonically active areas of the Earth. The subduction theory of one plate pushing underneath another plate, maybe it has been tested by vibrational measurements, but it hasn't really been explored very deeply. We have only drilled, I'm going to say about 7 miles into the Earth. Those are the deepest holes on the Earth up in Russia. That's a pinprick of our crust. Our crust is really close to 800 or 900 miles thick. So the idea that we could drill any kind of hole into it and discover what's inside our crust is absolutely ludicrous. To look at the 4.5 billion year geological record that we have on dry land, it's easy for a geologist to say how old the planet is. Everything makes sense. Everything lines up. We look at the two or three pieces of evidence that would prove or disprove the idea that the Earth was formed this way, and, gee, they seem to make sense to me. I'll run them by you. If the Earth had its crust expanding in the manner I've just been explaining in the last 5 or 6 minutes on expanding crust theory, we'd have to have a few pieces of evidence laying behind. First of all, we'd have to have layers of sea fossils at relatively high altitude in the mountains, and old mountain ranges like the Appalachians. And guess what? We do. In fact, if you go to Appalachia, you'll find the largest collection of trilobites anywhere on the planet. Well, that piece fits. The other piece would mean you'd have to have a fairly significant difference in the geological age of the sea floor relative to dry land. Well, if we just look at a couple of pieces of data, dry land is about 4.5 billion years old, and the oldest seafloor ever measured is 70 million years old. I'd say that's significant. Okay, that's a second piece of evidence that perhaps the crust has been expanding. The third would be all of the continental shelves, not necessarily the beach shores, because, you know, you're going to have erosion after a few million years, but the continental shelves should be pretty reliable. All of the continental shelves should fit together, not on one side of the planet, but if you shrink the planet to one third its present size, they better all fit together. And I mean New Zealand, Australia, South America, Africa, Russia, all across Asia, North America, it would all have to fit together. And don't leave out Antarctica. Well, guess what? They do. With just a little tiny bit, and I mean just like river width losses, it fits together. Just like a glove. All right, I'll give that one to you too. The other thing it would have to have, it would have to have a very significant magnetosphere. Why? Well, because if the crust is expanding and we leave a solid core behind, the core is going to be revolving at its original speed. The crust is going to slow down because of conservation of momentum. That means when an ice skater goes into a spin and she draws her arms in very, very tight, she spins faster and faster and faster and faster because she's shrinking the diameter of her energy system, which means that energy has to be conserved and she's going to spin faster. Now, when she lets her arms out, returning her diameter to what it once was, she slows down. That's called conservation of momentum. There's only so much energy in the system of the rotational Earth. So when the crust was small, next to the core, it was revolving very fast. And I could do the calculations, but not in my head. As the crust cooled, cracked open, cooled, cracked open, and cooled, the crust began to slow down, going from perhaps a 16-hour day to an 18-hour day, to a 20-hour day, a 22-hour day, and then finally a 24-hour day where we are now. Meanwhile, the core is left behind, revolving at its original speed. Now you have a counter-rotation. The crust is kind of rotating backwards compared to the core. Those two metal bodies, mostly iron and nickel, counter-rotating, are nothing more than a generator. And they produce a very powerful electrojet coming out of the poles of the Earth and a very powerful, measurable, observable, traceable magnetosphere around the Earth. And it is this magnetosphere that allows us to live on the surface of our planet. If we didn't have it, we'd be just like Mars, absolutely sterile on the surface of Mars. Why? Because the shortwave radiation and cosmic radiation that comes from the sun stops at nothing. It goes right to the surface of Mars. And it dimerizes, that is to say, it shatters any DNA that exists on the surface of Mars. It can't exist. Once that DNA, once that genetic material is shattered apart or dimerized from these photons coming in and striking portions of the molecule, either it can't go back together at all, which means it's dead, or when it comes back together, it's heavily mutated. Most of the time, that's not going to support life. Rarely will it support life. And that's why I'm a firm believer that there is life on Mars. We just haven't found it yet. But it's going to be rare. Here on Earth, we have a much more protected situation. And we can survive quite well, as long as we stay out of the sun for long periods of time. We're not built for it. We don't have skin that's able to handle prolonged exposure to the sun. If we stay exposed that way, we will live probably less than 100 years. If we protect ourselves from the sun and keep ourselves from being oxidized from within, we can easily live beyond 80 or 90 with a great quality of life. Not many of us do that. However, I gotta say, in this day and age, in the 21st century, the average person only spends 15% of their time outdoors. The rest of the time, we're in shelter. 15%. By the way, your car counts as a shelter. Yes, you have a steel roof over your head, unless you have the convertible top down. And your environment is controlled. You're not too cold in the winter. You're not too hot in the summer, because we have learned how to transfer energy out of the cab of the vehicle in the summertime and transfer energy into the cab in the wintertime to control that environment. We spend less than 15% of our time outdoors. Unless thank you.
xradio.com. BBS Radio.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge, bringing humanity closer to truth.
That's what happens when you're relying on hotel internet. One of the great things of internet radio is you get to experience the bloopers as well. Hope you didn't disappear on us. We're coming up to the top of the hour. We do have a lot of listeners out there, and we've covered expanding Earth theory. And the reason I want to cover this is because we have some coming events, geological events, which are just now beginning to resonate, not the least of which is the Indian River.
Hey, this is Vinny James, and you're listening to BBSRadio.com.
Why is this significant? It is significant because the Indian River Power Plant is 30 miles from New York City, which has a population of 30 million people. Now, you think that's pretty geologically stable area, and it is. I mean, when is the last time you heard of a really big earthquake in New York? Like, never. Mostly it's in L.A., right? The sad thing is that in the news, they're kind of treating this lightly, even though we have had earthquakes in Tonga, earthquakes in California, earthquakes in Japan, volcanoes in Japan, tsunami in Japan, and now we are beginning to have earthquakes near the Indian River Power Plant in New York. Now, they're small, but the worry is that that plant is old and it was not built to withstand earthquakes. They didn't have those requirements in place in that area when that was built. And it hasn't really been upgraded because they don't really have a tectonically active area. When we talk about the Pacific Rim, we're talking about the Pacific. We're not talking about the Atlantic, especially the North Atlantic. But if an earthquake occurs in the New York area and takes the Indian River Power Plant out the way it took the one in Japan out, mind you, the one in New York is not a cesium-137 reactor. The stuff that's in the Indian River Power Plant has a much longer half-life than cesium-137. Cesium-137 has a half-life of 30 years. If it gets away from you, you could just bury it in lead sand and come back 30 years later. It'll be much, much quieter. The one that happens up there is not going to be in the remote areas north of Tokyo. It's in the unremote areas in the outskirts of New York City. So it would not... It would not be great. Ultimately, what we want you to do is to be prepared and be aware. And that's what we're trying to cover this hour on X Squared Radio. It's why we went through this expanding crust theory. because there is a relationship, a tectonic relationship between the moon and the earth. And we've been trying to nail it down for years. We don't really understand it that carefully. Well, mostly because we haven't been to the moon in a while. We have some probes orbiting the moon, you know, telling us things about the moon, but we have not landed on the moon and actually done anything of consequence since the 70s. So, I mean, in my opinion, it would be a nice time to return to the moon. We certainly have the technology to be able to do that. And I think that we gain benefit from it more than just the data. We gain perspective. We realize that our nearest neighbor has a lot of advantages for us. It has a low gravity access to space. It has plenty of raw materials. It's got H3. It's got titanium. It's got aluminum. It has lots of water. And if you've got H3 and you've got water, you can make energy, create your own oxygen, and literally can have a very, very lucrative industry on the moon. Albeit, you'd be at 1/6 the gravity. You might have to rotate people in and out. But you could still maintain your body mass. I mean, yeah, you have to live to 1,800 pounds instead of 300 pounds when you're benching. That could be a real ego builder. But you can do it. And, of course, it's entirely possible to live under the surface of the moon so that those pesky little rice grain-sized meteors don't ruin your day. And the occasional solar storm won't bother you either. We'll take a quick break, about 3 or 4 minutes. We'll listen to some David Acton. This is one of his piano pieces called The Prodigal. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio after this. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. Spring is a time of new life. It is a time when all kinds of wildlife is being reborn. It's a time to throw open the windows and the doors and let the fresh air in the house and let the muskiness of winter out. It's a time to renew and also a time to forgive. And so I would ask all the listeners of X Squared Radio, take the time to forgive everyone right now. And let's look for the good in everyone and help it to grow a little bit every day. Because it's time to save the planet. And it's up to us. It's up to you and me. Each one individually. As we focus on the new year, and I don't mean from January, hunkered down for the winter during the cold months of January and February and the first parts of March aren't really my idea of the new year. The new year really begins with the 21st of March. This is after the Easter lilies have gone the way of the earth. The Bradford pears have already bloomed and gone. The last of the frost is probably yet to come. But most of the days are going to be nice from here on out. Let's take this earth, the entire thing, in our hands and let's move it forward. Do your best, look for the best, and be your best. And dream hard, people, because we need you. We need your dream and we won't make it without it. This is the final hour of X Squared Radio for this week. If you want to be part of it, you can reach us at 530-413-4511. If you're east of Earth, you can reach us at 530-413-4515. West of Earth, 530-413-4520. And we always welcome those that are out there listening by cell phone. They have their hands-free device and are not driving with one arm while they're pressing the phone against their head with the other. Nice and safe. 712-432-0075 with the access code 318-116-pound. We certainly don't encourage anyone to drive distracted. So while you're listening to X Squared Radio, don't text and drive. Just drive. And if you're sitting there working on your favorite project, listening to this as an archive, we welcome you as well. You are our main listener. You are our main target. And you're different than the regular broadcast radio listener. You expect more from your radio. You expect more from your host, which I am tonight. And you're unique in the sense that you have a laptop and a credit card in your hands. Not just like the regular driver with nothing but a steering wheel in their hands. You can affect the universe right now. And so there are a couple of ways I want to talk to you about doing that. One is my latest book, Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. It is a short book, just a skunch over 220 pages. It's designed to be short. It's designed to be readable. Every word in it is true. And it is designed to teach you how to dream properly, teach you how to put a dream out there in the future of the universe, provide you with the theory, the mathematics, and the physics behind making that dream a form of energy which resonates with the universe, and then to listen for the sympathetic resonation from the universe and act on those moments. I am a proponent, not a teacher of, but a proponent of the Flower of Life meditation, as originated by Drunvalel Melchizedek. He is a great teacher, a great originator. I highly recommend the two books that go with the meditation, although they are quite advanced. I do recommend the meditation for two reasons. One, it's quick. 17 breaths and you're in. Second, it's effective. It gets you in the state you need to be, not only to listen, but also to affect the universe. You're not becoming a monk here. You're not joining a monastery and disappearing off the face of the earth. Far from it. You are becoming a point of light on the earth. Your dream is becoming part of the future of the earth. And by the time you finish reading it, you'll realize we do not have to march down that eschatological path to Armageddon. Forget about it. We already read about that story. It isn't going to happen because we're not going to let it happen. We are going to manifest another future because that's what the Christ told us we could do. The prophets only told us about a future that would happen if we went forward asleep. But you're not asleep now. You're awake. So read the book. You can buy it anywhere where fine books are sold, or I recommend you buy it from the website at rememberingthefuturebook.com, because when you buy it there, you'll get it autographed by me, and you get the audio version of the entire book for free. I give it to you. And I realize that not everyone's a great reader, and that's okay, because I read it for you. So you get both. RememberingTheFutureBook.com. And the other thing I want to recommend is my teacher, my advanced teacher of this meditation, is none other than Maureen St. Germain. Now, you can go to her website at MaureenSt.Germain.com, and you can buy any one of her marvelous products. You can attend her lectures, which I highly recommend. They're affordable. She's wonderful. She's a great teacher. I've taken many classes from her. I've traveled to Tibet with her. She's a wonderful teacher. You can also, at the website, rememberingthefuturebook.com, you can buy the Merkaba 2 CD. This is an audio aid which can help you do the meditation. Some of you are really good at reading instructions and following them well. I am. But I also needed an audio aid to help me the first few dozen times I tried this meditation. It helps get the rhythm down. It helps get the breathing down to remember what to do with your hands while you're doing it. It is, I think, a wonderful, very inexpensive, and very pleasant experience to listen to the CD while you're meditating. 17 breaths and you're in, and then in the book, I teach you the 18th breath. The 18th breath is a maintenance breath. It keeps you in that state as long as you need to stay there. Now, I have one warning and one promise. The warning is, don't do the 18th breath while operating any equipment. Don't do it while you're driving. Don't do it while you're riding a motorcycle. Don't do it while you're operating something that could hurt somebody, because you can separate from your body. This breathing is designed to set up an electromagnetic field underneath the pineal gland. I experimented with all kinds of timings. This is the one that works. It works for everyone. I've taught it. It functions. It's simple to do, and it keeps you in your heart where you need to be to listen and to also broadcast to the universe. The promise is, if you will read the book and if you will do this meditation in earnest for 6 months, I promise you will be on the best trajectory that you could dream of in your life. And it works for everything. It works with physical objects. That's the easy part. I mean, if all you want is a motorcycle, all you want is a truck or a house or to marry a rich man, have at it. I mean, you'll do it every time. But you want to be something? You want to do something? You have a dream of something you've always wanted to be or always wanted to do? Oh, my goodness. The being and the doing part? Now, that's an amazing journey. Because you will be things and do things everyone told you you could not be or do. Because it's so far out of the realm of reality. It's beyond your class. It's beyond your financial ability. It is not. You are the 100% creator of your future. Nobody has a destiny for you. Nobody has a caste that you are stuck inside of. Nobody has a judgment upon you. You judge yourself instantly by your own thoughts and your own energy level. You are nothing but peas and carrots and hamburgers and a soul inside. And you're the only one in the whole universe. You're perfect and you're unique and you're great. And you could be great on this planet. It was promised to us and it's true. This book just gives you the tools to work the promise. So, enough commercials. Let's carry on with what we were talking about. Remember, the phone lines are open, 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. You can reach us right here on X Squared Radio. The nice thing is we connect the whole planet together at one time here on BBS Radio Network. We have listeners in Australia, London. Yes, we have listeners in Japan. I hope our good friend Ramon is okay in Japan. We have listeners on the West Coast, East Coast, up in the North countries of Canada, and also down in South America and in Mexico. And we welcome you all to X Squared Radio. But we also, if you will call in or if you will chat to me, which I am available at X2-Radio on Skype. We also have a chat room at xsquaredradio.com. Many of our listeners go there to kind of banty about different things that are talked about on the program. Last week I mentioned that we always have an open call here at X Squared Radio for any aliens. Yes, we don't throw out any data here. This is a scientific talk radio program. But if you are not from this world, and I don't mean, let me clarify that, okay, because none of us really are, right? I mean if you weren't born on this world, you were born on another world, and you came here either in a craft or in some kind of transdimensional transfer, any other way than being born, I want you to call into the program. I will protect your anonymity, no problem there. You have a forum by which you can reach the world right here and go into the archives by coming on this program. There's no fear here. Now, I realize you guys are out there in ships, in the water, in the skies, in the forests, in the mountains, and you're as present as you want to be. But I'm just telling you, you've got an open invitation here. No problems. Okay, no fear. This is sanctuary for you. 530-413-4511. Now, the interesting thing is in the chat room, they were uproariously discussing that perhaps I was the alien. Okay, I'm not going to argue with that. But now, the point is that to the best of my recollection, I was born here, so I don't qualify. At least in that respect. But if you want to call and talk about it, we'll talk about it. Mortal life is what it is. It is an experience for an immortal being, an eternal being, to have a very physical experience and a thing I call the biological transducer. It picks up all the energies of this planet, sound and wavelengths of light and various chemical makeups. We've got a wonderful, wonderful spectrometer on the tip of our tongue. We can tell very, very subtle differences in chemical content between sweet and sour and bitter and et cetera. If it wasn't the case, I mean, we wouldn't have chefs, okay? The culinary experience of Earth alone is worth the trip here. But we also get to experience love in a frustrating and limited way, in the sense that we must figure out one another. We must remember, did I ever know you? Did I know you from somewhere? Chances are, yes. But when we put it in the perspective of what's on our driver's license, I was born in 1957. I was born in 1962. When we limit that to a single mortal existence, you really don't get the grand perspective of the experience. You don't realize that the tan that you might get, or the music that you might listen to, or the food that you might eat, or the job that you might take, can have such broad-reaching effects on your life. But when we communicate one with another, when we transfer thoughts and ideas one to another, we interact with one another, we become much more aware of what we are, who we are, who they are, what we might have been to one another long ago, or perhaps in the future. And occasionally we create life in our own image, one with another. And that is an experience too, to watch those likenesses of ourselves, occupied, of course, by other sovereign beings who rely on us for their guidance for the first few years of their life anyway, and always look up to us and respect us and realize that at least this time around, they are our children. I would like to know how many of you feel that you've had a relationship with one of your offspring whereby you realized at one point maybe you were their child. To realize that we have always existed does not trivialize the existence here on this earth at all. In fact, it makes it even more special, because we have this unique moment. And believe me, life is just a moment. If you don't believe me, go to rememberingthefuturebook.com and look at the differences between my high school senior graduation picture and a most recent picture of me in a ball cap, or the one on the cover of xwordradio.com. To me, that's only been a few minutes. Only a few minutes. To you, it's been 40 years. Well, 40 years? What's 40 years? 40 years is 5 minutes. I just happen to spread it out over 40 years. In the few moments that we're here on Earth, we have this mortal experience in which we have wonderful joys. We also have terrible pains. Ouch! Sometimes we have illnesses and handicaps, and sometimes we have shortcomings, things that end our lives what seems prematurely. Hardly enough of a mortal experience to be the rich treasure that an immortal being desires. Then you realize, as you read history and listen to music over hundreds, perhaps thousands of years, then the quality of this experience can be enriched. It can be focused on moments instead of years, minutes instead of the time between paychecks or family vacations. And the realization that each and every soul that's here on the earth right now is valuable and deserves to live an entire life and to not be ended, to not be robbed, to not be obfuscated or judged by us. That's a great realization. That is an idea that can change your life. It can change the way you live. It changes the way you look at your boss. It changes the way you look at your subordinates at work, or even your supervisor at work. It changes the way you look at your spouse, at your children, at your neighbor's children. It makes you revere life because it is a special experience for which I guarantee you, you have to stand in line to get, especially here on this planet. Right now, there are close to 7 billion of us alive on the earth at one time. That is a special condition, people. We haven't been here very often. If we have, we didn't make it. Now we're alive on the earth, almost 7 billion strong, and we've got the ability to communicate just like this, all at once, all of us together, on one radio program. You can call in here and have your voice heard everywhere around the earth. I can speak to you and relay my thoughts to you or my interpretation of the way I see things to you. And you can hang up. Or you can join us. And the quality of this is what makes this experience week to week, day to day, relationship to relationship, so powerful. And maybe that's why we're here. Maybe that's what we're doing. And if you want to reach me, you can do so by calling in the numbers that are at the website at xsquaredradio.com. I highly recommend that you use your Skype to just write me a thought. Write me a couple sentences. I can read and talk at the same time, okay? I do have somebody that's written me and it says, okay, don't read this on the air. So they not only don't want to be heard on the air, they don't want their thoughts heard on the air. They're just for me. So I'm just saying that you are as divine as any other being that's ever lived here on this earth. I'm not a religious person anymore. Used to be. Taught Sunday school for 30 years. I enjoyed it. I taught that Sunday school as though it was a spiritual experience. And there's a difference between being spiritual and being religious. Okay? Being religious makes you afraid of going to hell. Being spiritual, you realize you've already been there. And you can walk away from it anytime you want. Judge yourself again, you're in heaven. Bull. Is it you're 100% you will say, now wait a minute, I didn't. I'm not happy. I promise you, if you realistically sat down and drew the lines from where you are to how you got there, every choice was yours. I have one chatter who says, unfortunately, we live in a fear matrix. Allow me to maybe not disagree with that. I perhaps agree with that in one point. A fear matrix has been constructed on the earth. It resonates every single evening on the news over and over and over again. They put their message out there. And that experience can harm us if we keep listening to it over and over and over again. That fear matrix does exist, and it is very high energy. Now, one of the things that you realize is guys like Gaddafi, guys like Cheney and others, the only way they can be powerful is if people allow them to be powerful. They could be powerful all by themselves in their own little padded room, and it won't make any difference at all. It's only when the fear of the people feed power into that matrix that they become powerful. We do live also in a love matrix. We live in a very high vibrational matrix. One of the things that's being realized, as I was talking earlier about toroidal gravity, tying bodies together over large distances of space, is that there are grids of energy around planets. And it appears that these grids are locked in to certain places on the Earth, mountains. I guess as some ancients would call them holy places. They are places that that prophets in a collection of stones, sometimes deep in the forest. There are places where this grid is connected to the Earth. Now, you remember the first hour I was talking about the solar tsunami coming to Earth in 1859, hitting the telescope. Offices on fire and electrocuting people. That grid is just like that telegraph wire around this planet. It picks up the frequencies that are available in the universe. And with that grid, we can use the grid of the Earth I, for one, go through life with no fear. I don't recognize the fear matrix. Does it recognize it? If you become part of it, if you realize that these conspiracies can affect you if you ingest them and digest them and let them go through you. But if you let them roll off your back, if you realize that you can keep in a meditative state, in, well, let's call it a prayerful state, and realize that there is good around you and tune into that, well, a whole new resonation will go out. By the way, I realize the audio is a little iffy tonight because I'm on hotel internet, so it may be a little bit jumpy. One of my listeners out there has asked me to recount the experience at Mount Shasta, and also I think he may be talking about the one at Mount Adams, because I've been to Mount Shasta several times, and it was built up really big, and I was really expecting to see something, and I did pour my heart into it, and I didn't find anything at Shasta. For some reason, it just didn't resonate with me. I met with people who said that they'd been to Telos, or Telos, a city that exists underneath the mountain, but we could never find an opening to it. I went there many times, I meditated there, but I did have a really cool experience there, and I got to tell you about it. I was up on Mount Shasta. It was early spring, well, maybe late spring, because it wasn't that cold up there. It was about 70, 72 degrees. And I was sitting on a rock with a couple of friends. There was not a cloud in the sky anywhere as far as you could see. And believe me, from 9,000 feet, you can see a long way from up there. Totally, completely blue sky. And sitting on this rock, it just seemed the perfect place to meditate. And so that's what we did. We put our backs together there. All right, I'm sorry for the poor internet quality. It isn't my fault. It is Comcast. If you have a chance to get Comcast, don't. It's poor all the way across the nation. They're having troubles with it on the West Coast. We're having troubles with it down here in Mississippi. We hope to be able to struggle through the last 20 minutes. The cloud appeared above our heads on Mount Shasta as we were sitting there. It formed in a perfectly clear blue sky. And it stayed there despite a 5 to 6 mile an hour wind that was blowing things away. That cloud stayed above us for more than 2 hours, and it never did leave. I felt like it was some kind of special experience, to say the least, that we were the only ones on the mountain. We were meditating on this boulder, and this little white cloud formed right above our heads and stayed there despite the wind blowing over the top of that mountain. No, it wasn't like a cloud over our heads making things dark. It was like a sign that it was responding to our presence there. And I thought that was a pretty special experience. Now, the experience that happened at Mount Adams was quite something different. This grid that I was talking about earlier that's connected to the earth is connected to the earth, I think, mostly at the mountains. Rainier, Adams, Washington, McKinley, Shasta, and, of course, especially Everest and the Ring of Power in the Himalayas. I've been to all those areas, and I always feel special in the mountains. I feel the presence of great power. Now, does that mean you have to go to the mountains to get your revelations? No. Maybe going to the mountain meant going to prayer. Maybe it meant, you know, going into meditation. Hard to tell. But it's simple to realize just by reading the historical record that Jesus, Peter, James, John, Moses, Noah, they were all transformed, transfigured when they went to the mountaintop. And so the experience that happened at Mount Adams was life-changing. No doubt about it. It was life-changing. When that mountain connected to me for however many minutes I was in that meditation and transmitted music to me, great singing, unbelievable choir singing of those words, peace, love, and joy. And when that voice came at the end and just, I'm not going to say it ended 30 years of religious training and religious teaching. It fulfilled it. It fulfilled it. I realized that everything that I had been learning and teaching, and believe me, when you teach the scriptures, you learn a lot more about them than if you just read them. Everything that I had been teaching and everything that I had learned had prepared me for that moment. And it was at that moment I realized who I was. And I have been living who I was ever since that moment. And I changed physically. I changed physically. I mean, I had chronic asthma from the time I was 5 years old. I have not only not had an asthma attack since August 17th, 2006, I haven't even had shortness of breath. I go to the gym on a regular basis and do aerobics, exactly the conditions that used to bring on an asthma attack. Haven't had one in 5 years, not since that day. I changed physically. So these are the kinds of things that can occur in our lives when we set these energies out there and we concentrate on them and follow them. So when people come to me and say that we live in a fear matrix, I have to take a positive turn on it. I can't just hunker down and say, you're right, we live in a fear matrix, keep your head down, watch your step, don't ever get arrested. You know, don't be very vocal. Don't try, because you're never going to make it, because there's big, powerful forces that control the whole world. I'm saying that as individuals, we have all the tools that great teachers like Jesus and Buddha told us that we have. We have the ability, if we apply the faith of a mustard seed, as it were, a hammer the size of a mustard seed, okay? But if we apply it at exactly the right moment, over and over again, it will resonate with the universe. And the universe will send back sympathetic resonations that can add to, constructively add to, that dream and make it happen, allow it to happen. That's the way planets exist. It's the way stars exist. It's the difference between the matter we can't see in the universe and the matter we can see in the universe. The matter we can see in the universe has had enough energy resonate with that element that it now exists. Oxygen, nitrogen, tin, carbon, all of these elements exist because they resonate with the right energy. And that resonation occurs at a ratio of 1.618 to 1 over and over and over again. It is how we move through the periodic chart. It is how the proportion of molecular bonds are put together. It is how elements themselves form. It is how protons are formed, and from that, neutrons are formed as electrons join them. And not all protons are exactly alike. There's a statistical range of weights of protons. But at the end of the day, they're just energy that has constructively interfered one with another to become a proton. Now, we're pretty advanced beings, or so we think, and we're learning how to slam these protons apart, shattering them into a billion little quarks, and we can identify those quarks. We're smart enough to name them, but we're not smart enough to put the quarks back together to make a proton. And I'm saying that's where the power of creation is. When all that had to happen is the being say, "I am," and then let there be light. And it was. I'm saying, from a physics point of view, each one of us have that ability to say, "Let there be light." Each one of us have that ability to turn our own lives, our community's lives, our nation's lives, and the planet itself. Absolutely we do. And we can do it as individuals, as a group. If two people get together, it's great. 200 is even better. 2 million, almost unstoppable. 2 billion, you get the idea? We do not have to follow the path to Armageddon. As I said in the last hour, that was laid down for us by prophets who said what would happen if we didn't do it. But we are doing it, and we can do it, and we can wake up to it. And so we can make a heaven on earth, and we will. So I don't want to point people in one direction or another. I don't want to point you to a church. I don't want to point you to a God, because you have it in you already. Our job here isn't to preach to you. It isn't to tell you to be faithful or righteous. You can manifest anything you want for good or for ill, if you can find the energy to resonate with your dream, it will be a reality. And from a scientific point of view, it makes complete sense. In fact, if energy does not resonate one with itself, it cannot exist. When we sit down and we talk about what are the odds of different kinds of universes forming, like, gee, isn't it strange that we have a universe that's based on carbon? I mean, really, what would happen if we had a universe based on, say, silicone? I guess we'd be completely different beings then, wouldn't we? Well, I thought about that and thought about that, and I looked at the gamut of stars that are out there from one end of the class to the other. Blue stars and red stars and yellow stars and white stars, all putting off different frequencies. I realized that there's a very narrow range of frequencies that stars put off. And inside those frequencies, and believe me, they're strict. You get 1% out of line, and nothing is going to be produced. Oxygen, carbon, nitrogen, sulfur, silicon, hydrogen, all of these are emitted by stars, high complex elements that go out into the universe and form solid matter. This is the only kind of universe that can form. No other resonation of energy can exist. It's all outside the golden mean, and it must obey that mathematical law of 1.618 to 1. The wavelength will not add one to another. They will subtract one from another, and you cannot have anything manifest out of chaos that is destructively interfering with itself. It just won't happen. No matter how much energy you pour into it, it will rot and fall apart. However, if it obeys the principle, if it obeys the mathematical ratio, then it will manifest. Now, does that mean you have to have a dream that resonates with the universe? Yes, but believe me, the choices of dreams that you could have, the odds of you finding one that no portion of the universe will resonate with are nearly impossible. I would not even want to try to calculate the odds. It'd be so low. In fact, if you divided it into one, it would almost be infinity. So put your dream out there, follow what is in the book, and you'll make it. You'll make it. And as I said before, when I get on my motorcycle, I put the key in the ignition, turn it on, press the start button, and let out the clutch. I'm already at my destination. That's a little bit of a Zen way of saying, it's the journey, folks. It's the path that is the goal of life. It's not finishing the sandcastle. It's building the sandcastle that's the fun. It's getting there. It's not half the fun. It's all the fun, people. Because when you finish the sandcastle, there's only one thing left to do. Jump on it. We're done. We're going back to the house. Fun over. Well, people, I'm not ready to go back to the house. I don't think you are either. Mama's not flashing the porch light yet. So let's just keep building, okay? Let's just keep dreaming. Let's just keep it going. Manifest the dream and head for it. Thank you so much for being part of X Squared Radio tonight. Thank you for chatting. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for writing. I appreciate it more than you know. Keep listening, Earth Explorers. We'll see you next week right here.
It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening.
tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day, and before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.